Today's daf is Shabbos daf pei. We left off in the last three words of daf ayin tesam beis. Today's shir is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children, and is also sponsored anonymously lezecher nishmas Pesach ben Shmuel alav shalom in honor of his yard site, which is today. Neshama Shav and Aliyah. We thank both sponsors very much for the sponsorship. So we are holding again, like we said, the last three words of daf ayin tesam beis, and the Gemara is going to discuss chatzi shir when it comes to hotza'ah. What if a person is motzi? First we start with chatzi shir of ink and paraphernalia used for writing, and then we're going to talk about chatzi shir of food. If a person takes out a chatzi shir, then takes out another chatzi shir, when a person is going to be chayim, and then we're going to elaborate on many of the other shirim that are mentioned in the Mishnayos, what they exactly mean, and on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to talk about different hair removal products, who uses the different products, and when a person is chayiv on hotza'ah for these different items, for these different products. And the Mishnah on Amud Beis is just going to continue the list of different items and the shear for hotza'ah of all of these different items. So again, let's begin the last three words on the page on Daf Ayin Tes Amud Beis. So the last three words are Dio Kedei Lichtov. The Mishnah had said that the shear of Dio, the shear of ink that you're chayiv for being motzi, is the amount of ink you would use to write two letters. So Tana, shtei osios b'dio, shtei osios b'kulmus, shtei osios b'kalmarin. That the Braisa tells us the amount that writes that it takes to write shtei osios, that's true whether you're carrying out two letters worth of dry ink, or whether it's two osios that are still in the quill, or whether it's two osios that are still in the ink well. It's the amount of ink that would be needed to write two osios when that ink is still in the ink well. So the shear is k'siva shtei osios, regardless of what stage those osios are in right now. So boy rava os achas b'diova os achas b'kulmos os achas b'kalmarin mahu. What if you don't have a shear shtei osios in any one given place, but you have a shear os achas of dry ink? Can you be mitzarev that with a shear os achas of ink in the quill or of ink in the ink well? So it says take. We don't know. We don't have an answer to that shaila. The Safik is if you're chayiv mishum the hotzah of the dio, but the hotzah of the kulmus apparently you're definitely not chayiv for, right? That's what the Rishonim point out. Meaning if you're carrying ink in the kulmus in the quill, so shouldn't you be chayiv for carrying out the quill itself? Forget about the ink. So apparently that you're not chayiv for because the kulmus is tafel the dio. It's considered to be secondary to the dio, and the dio is pachos mikashir, just like the Gemara is going to say. That if you take out the amount of food that's pachos mikashir in a kli, you're putter for carrying the kli as well, because the kli is tafel to the food. That's what Rashi points out over here. The Meiri just adds that even if you hold that if you're motzi a kli with food, pachos mikashir, that the kli does not become batal and that you're chayiv for the hotzah of the kli, over here it could be that you were shogeg on the hotzah of the dio and you were mazid on the hotzah of the kli. So mela on the hotzah of the kli b'mazid, you're not going to be chayiv chatos, because did be mazid. And when it comes to the dio, that you're going to be chayiv chatos for, because that you in fact did be shogeg. So maybe that would be the situation where we're only concerned about whether there's a chayiv chatos on the dio and not a chayiv chatos on the kli. So that's what the Gemara leaves b'teku. Can you be mitzarif the shiurim? Amar Rava. Similarly, when it comes to the din hotza'a, if you have if you carry out ink from Rishos Yach to Rishos Rabim, and it's the amount of ink that it would take to write two osios, uksavan kshumahalich, and then you write them as you're moving. Normally, in order to be chayv rotzah, you need akira and a hanacha. So where did you place this ink down? As you were walking, you wrote it down. There was like a board on the side of the Rosh Hashanah, and you're just writing it down as you're walking. So that's your hanacha of the letters. So chayv, then you're going to be chayv. Why? Ksivason zuhi hanachasan. By writing it down, that is the hanacha that's done in the Rishos HaRabim. It's pasha that you're also chayiv mishum ksiva, the Ritva points out, right? Meaning if you're kosev shtei osios, you're chayiv for kosev. So forget about hotza'ah, you're also chayiv for kosev over here. There's a second melacha over here. Generally speaking, the rule is that in order to be chayiv, you need for hotza'ah, you need both an akira and a hanacha. So the Gemara had said way back in the first parak that even if a person stops to rest, that's considered a hanacha. So over here we're talking about where he didn't stop to rest. Christ. He continues to walk, but since the way to be maniach dio is by putting it on paper, by putting the ink down on paper, and that's what he's doing, so he's going to be chayiv, because he put the dio in the makom that it could stay there forever. The Tosos explains in Maseches Erevin on Daf Chaf Amud Aleph that since the dio is batel to the place that it's written on, it's considered that you did a hanacha. And we learn from there that if a person is bolea in the ochel, if a person swallows food, that's also called a hanacha because it becomes batel to the guf. So even though it's not a classic hanacha where something is resting on something else, but nevertheless, when something becomes batel to something else, that's also considered a hanacha. The Rishonim are also bothered why it is that you're chayiv for the hotzah on the ink. What about and why don't we talk about the hotzah of the paper, the parchment that you're writing it on? So it must be, the Rishonim say, that you actually didn't carry the parchment out from the Rosh HaSiyachid. The niyar was already there in the Rosh HaSarabim. Or you took out a piece of paper that didn't have a shear that you'd be chayiv on hotzah for such a shear. That's what it's the chidushim amiuchasim l'ran suggests. Other rishonim, however, say no. The paper has to be 4x4 tefachim because you're only chayiv on ha'anacha if you put it down on a place that's a makum chashuv of 4x4 tefachim. So the Meiri quotes such a daya, but he thinks that that's incorrect, and he says even if the niyar, even if the paper is less than 4x4 tefachim, you're still chayiv for being motzi mirush. Because the ksiva on the paper makes it considered as if it is a makom chashuv. Machshavasu meshavi le'makom. The fact that you're machshiv that as a makom makes it a makom. And that's what most of the Rishonim assume over here, that the paper doesn't actually have to be a makom that's 4x4 tefachim. The paper is a place that's appropriate to place the ink, and memela, that makes it a makom chashuv insofar as the ink is concerned. Va'amarava, hotzios achas uksava. If a person carries out enough ink to write one letter, and he writes down one letter, and then the chazav hotzi osa chasuksava. Then he goes back in, gets a little more ink, enough to write one more letter, and he writes one more letter. So he's pater. He's pater on the hotzah. My time. Well, why are they not mitzdarif with each other? Why don't we say that that equals up together to a shear of shtei osios? Because at the time that he took out the last one, the first one has already dried up, and therefore once it dries, it loses some of the shear. So by the time he finishes the melach of hotzah, and we're trying to be mitzdarif the first letter with the second letter, you already don't have the shear of ksivas shtei osios. That's how Rashi explains. So the Rishonim say, well, wait a second. If a person eats a chatzi zayis chelev and then he eats another chatzi zayis chelev behel mechad, all in one shot, so it's mitzdarif. The two achilos are mitzdarif to be mechayiv him for achilos kazayis. Not all much of behel mechad means without realizing in between what he had done, he's going to be chayiv, even though at the time that he ate the second chatzi zayis, he doesn't have the first chatzi zayis anymore. It's already in his stomach because that's the derech achila, and you're still going to be chayiv. So why don't you say the same thing by hotzah? So the Meiri explains by hotzah Shabbos, you need the chatzi arishon to still be there to be mitzdarif with the chatzi asheni. When it comes to achila, it's derech achila savakach. No one makes sure to eat exactly a chatzi all at once, that you swallow it all at once. You eat normally, so it's it's naturally going to be mitzdarif. The halacha is going to recognize that that's the derech achila, that's the normal way to eat, and therefore it's naturally going to be mitzdarif. But when it comes to hotzah of ink, when it comes to writing, so then it needs to be mitzdarif, it needs to actually be mitzdarif. So it sounds from the Meiri that this klal that we're giving about is true by other Yisurim in the Torah as well, like Achilas Chel, that this isn't just a Hilchos Shabbos, a hotzah issue, but this is something that relates to all Yisurim. Prima Gadim, this Psicha Tilchos Shabbos, is not sure about that. He says maybe this din of being mitzdarif and requiring the whole shear at the time that the second chatzi shear is filled, maybe that din is only by hotza'a, because hotza'a by definition is a malacha gerua. So because of its status as a malacha gerua, as a lower level malacha, maybe it takes a little bit more to be chayiv mishum hotza'a. But achilas chelev is a regular bona fide iser, a regular lav sheyesh bo maisa, and therefore it's not going to require that the full shear be there at the time of the violation. violation of the Isser. That's what the Prima Gadim raises as a possibility, but seems to be against this Mi'iri that clearly links the two halachos with each other. Okay, once we talk about being motzi, a chatzi shir of dio, chatzi shir of ink, so Gemara brings another halacha related to chatzi shir. V'yamarava, hotzi chatzi grogeres achas. If a person takes out a half of a grogeres of food from Rishus Yachat to Rishus Rabim, v'nicha, and he puts down that half a grogeres. The shir of ochlin is always a grogeres. So he takes a chatzi grogeres and places it down. V'chazer v'hotzi chatzi grogeres achas. Then he goes and he takes another half a grogeres, v'nicha, and he places it down in Rishus Rabim. Rishona nasa kamisha kol tokelev oshenisrafa upater. The first one is as if it's gone already. We view it as if a dog had caught it and eaten it, or it got burnt. It's already been destroyed and burnt, and therefore you can be potter. Frankly, Rav Amai, Hamancha, what do you mean it got burnt? It's right there. Nothing happened to it. It's sitting there in the Rosh Hasharabim. So why would you say that you view it as if it's gone? Why would we view it as if it's gone? So we're in a Hachikamar. Vim Kadam, Yigbiya Rishona Kadam Anachashnia, Nasus Rishona Kimi Sheniklata Oshanisrafa. No, you undid the Maisa Hanacha. You take out your Chatzi Shir, you put it down, and then before you put down the second Chatzi Shir, you have lifted the first Chatzi Shir off of the ground. So we view that as if it was, it never really landed, as if it got burnt in mid-air before it had to land, and therefore the second Chatzi Shir, it's not going to be mitzarif with the first Chatzi Shir, because they never were munach on the ground at the same time. They never had a simultaneous hanacha, and therefore they're not able to be mitzarif, and that's why you're going to be potter. V'omer Rava. Rava tells us another din about Chatzi Shir. Chatzi grogeres v'hinicha. Let's say you hotzi chatzi grogeres v'hinicha. You carry out the chatzi grogeres of food to Rosh Hashanah and you put it down. V'choz v'hotzi chatzi grogeres v'evira derech aleha. And instead of putting down the second chatzi grogeres, you just pass it over the first one. You carry it over and it goes right over, hovers right above the first chatzi grogeres, chayiv. Even though you never really did a hanacha on the second chatzi grogeres, you're still going to be chayiv. It's going to be mitzarif to the shir. Says the Gemara, that is strange. V'amai, halo nach. There was never a hanacha on the second chatzi grogeres. How could that possibly be mitzarif to the shir? And so Gemara, well, we left out a detail. Kegon she'evira toch shlosha. Now the case is, the second chatzi grogeres was within three tvachim of the ground, and this is the principle known as lavud, that anything that's within three tvachim of the ground is considered as if it's placed on the ground as well, and therefore it's mitzarif to the first chatzi shir. Tosus points out, well, not only did the Gemara initially leave out one important detail, it gave us a detail that was totally unimportant, because it also said heviru derech aleha, that you passed the second chatzi right over the first chatzi. That's totally irrelevant. As long as the second chatzi was within three tvachim of the ground, it didn't have to be directly above the first chatzi grogeres. So Tos points out that that would really be unnecessary to say that heviru derech aleha, according to what the Gemara is explaining, because the chiddush over here is that normally you need a place for it to rest. The Gemara is about to say, "V'amar Rava tok shlosha l'rabbanan tzarich hanachal gabi mashu." Well, wait a second. The Gemara says, "Does that work as far as lavud is concerned? That as long as something is within the airspace within three tefachim of the ground, we view that as if it's resting within three tefachim of the ground. That's not really true. It needs to rest on something. It could be resting on a stick that has that does not have a makam of dalit al dalit. Just you know." Resting on that, that's fine too, as long as it's within three tefachim of the ground. But it's got to be on something. So lo kasha, says the Gemara, no, kan bezorek, kan bimavir. It is resting, you're holding it, so it's in your hand. And as long as it's in your hand, that's considered that it has a hanacha on something. And then when your hand is within three tefachim of the ground, that's considered that it's placed on the ground itself on account of lavud. If you're zorek, you throw it through a Rosh Hasharab, even if you're throwing it within three tefachim of the ground, that is not considered anacha, because it's not actually physically resting on anything. So that's the difference between the case where you require it to be physically resting on something and where you don't require it to be physically resting on something. So meaning you always require it to be physically resting on something, but your hand is considered to be physically resting on something. So as long as it's within three tefachim of the ground, it's still going to be able to be mitzaref with the first chatzi shir. Weiter in the topic of chatzi shir, Tan Rabbanan, we have a b'raisa hotzi chatzi grogeres v'chazer v'hotzi chatzi grogeres belim echad. If a person carries out a half of grogeres of food from Rishus Yach to Rishus Ram, and then he takes another chatzi grogeres from Rishus Yach to Rishus Ram, without realizing in between that today is Shabbos. So he forgot that it's Shabbos, he takes out a chatzi grogeres, still doesn't realize Shabbos, takes another chatzi grogeres chayiv. So that's mitztarif, because there is no, it's not shtei alemos, it's halim echad. So you're going to be chayiv a carbon chatos. But b'shtei halemos, let's say he realized in between that it was Shabbos, and then he forgot again, and he took a second chatzi grogeres, then pater. Then he's going to be pater, because that's the yediyas ha'isr between the two otzaos, makes it two separate actions, so there are two separate shkagos, and each shkago was pachas mikashir, so you're going to be pater. Rabbi Yossi Omer, it's not enough that it be done Be'alim Echad. The only time you're going to be chayiv if it's Be'alim Echad is if you brought both chatzi shears to the same Rishus HaRabim. But l'shtei Rishuyos, if you brought a chatzi shear to one Rishus HaRabim, still not realizing it's Shabbos, you brought a second chatzi shear to a second Rishus HaRabim, then pater, because just like Yediyas HaIsir is mechalik between one Hotza'a and another, so too Hefsek Rishuyos is mechalik between one Hotza'a and the other. When you have a Rishus HaRabim and another Rishus HaRabim, those are considered two different Hotza'os. You cannot combine them as a single Hotza'a. Tosos raises the question, Nimra of Beinu Tam, that the Gemara is going to say later on in Daf Kuf Dalid, that if you write Os Achas B'Tveria and Os Achas B'Tzipori, you're chayiv for Kosev Shtei Osios. That if a person writes one letter in Tveria and another letter in Tzipori, that's called Kosev. Because Chisarun Kirva is not considered Chisarun Maisa. Just because the two letters aren't next to each other, that's not considered that they lack a maisa. So says it's difficult, because if over here also you should say that chisar and akirva between the different rishuyos should not be chisar and maisa, and you should be chayv mishamotza. And based on that, Rabbeinu Tam says that he thinks the girs in our Gemara that as we have it is all wrong, and we should be goris like Rabbeinu Chananel, who has from in the name of Rabbi Yossi that may rishus echad chayiv mishtei rishuyos pater. That it's not about carrying two shtei rishuyos, it's about carrying from Shtei Rishuyos. That if each Chatzi Shir originated in a separate Rishus HaYachid, that's where we're saying you're going to be Pater. But the fact that they ended up in different Rishuyos Ram, that won't make any difference. The fact that that's just Mechusar Kirva, but where they originated from is going to make all the difference. That's the Girsa of Rabbeinu Chananel. Of course, you then need to explain why it would matter that they originated in separate Rishuyos, so the Achronim work on that issue. However, the Ri is Mechalik between Ksiva and Hotza'a. He keeps our Girsa, and he says there's a difference between Kosev and Hotza'a. When it comes to Kosev, we're Mitzarif Shtei Osios that are in very, very different places, very far from each other, because the Chisaron of Kirvasa Osios is not a Chisaron Maisa. It's considered as if they're already Karov. But when it comes to Hotza'a, the whole idea of Hotza'a, the whole Malach of Hotza'a is just moving location, right? The Malach of Ksiva is creating letters. So you've done that, and it doesn't matter where you've created the letters. They could be on different ends of the earth, but you've created these two letters. The Malach of Hotza'a is a little different. The Malach of Hotza'a, the whole Malach is that you've moved it from one space to another. So if they're in two totally different spaces, that affects the very nature of the Malach of Hotza'a. That's how the Ri explains the difference between Hotza'a versus Kosev. So when it comes to Kosev, this idea of Chisaron Kirva, it has a flip side. I think we may have discussed recently, I don't remember if it was in Daf Yomri or one of the other shiurim, that you know, you have sometimes you have books with like library books that have letters on the edges. So there's a famous passage in the Ramah, in the Tshuvas Ramah, where it discusses whether you're allowed to open and close such books. So he talks about, no, you're not really connecting the letters, it's just you're being makariv the osios zelazeh. You're just bringing them together. The letters are already there, you're just being makariv them to create the letters. So the Taz is unhappy with that, and he has he doesn't like it at all. But a lot of people have been asking me recently whether they're allowed to do jigsaw puzzles on Shabbos, because they're long Shabbos afternoons. There's no Daf Yomi Shir to go to in the afternoon. There's no Mincha to go to in the afternoon. You know, it's a long Shabbos afternoon. Everyone's home, so it's a good activity to do jigsaw puzzles. So I always said no. I thought it was Pashut that it's going to be after that. It's a violation of Kosev. So people are telling me, no, we see in a lot of the English books that the English halacha books that they say that you're allowed to do it. So I said, okay, I'll take a look. I couldn't imagine why it would be mutter. So I looked in all the English books. They all say it's asr, by the way. In all the English, at least the English books I have, I looked in Rav Simcha ben Kohn and in the Rabbi Ribiat and the Lama Tas Melachos. They all say it's asr, but I found what they're probably basing it on. Rav Shlomo Zalman talks, not Rav Shlomo Zalman, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchsa, which is the equivalent of Rav Shlomo Zalman, I guess, talks about children doing puzzles where they're makariv the different pieces to each other to make a picture. And in that case, he was makel based on that Ramah. He's makel based on that Ramah, at the very least for children to be able to do it. But I think he's talking about an entirely different... First of all, half the poskim reject the Ramah. But aside from that, he's talking about an entirely different metzius. He's talking about just where it's kirva, that's all it is. You're just putting them in proximity to each other. But when you do a jigsaw puzzle, you're interlocking the pieces and creating a picture. A picture is worth 1,000 words. So I would think that would be when you're creating a picture that cannot be seen with each piece, I would think that's absolutely a violation of the melacha of kosev on Shabbos. Okay, that's just reminded me when we talk about kirva of osios. So Amar Rabba. So now the Gemara brings three opinions. What's considered a hefsek as far as being considered two rishuyos? Meaning, we said according to Rabbi Yossi that if you motzi chatzi grogeris to one rishus, another chatzi grogeris to another rishus, that's not mitzdari. If it's not considered one hotz. What makes something two rishuyos? How do I define what's two separate rishuyos harabim? So I'm a rabba, v'ushi eshchiv chatas beinehem. You have to have a legitimate rishus hayachid in between the two rishuyos harabim. Meaning it has to be so separated from each other that there will be a chiv chatas to carry from the space in between to either of those rishuyos harabim. Aval karmel is low, but if you have something that on a d'oraisa level is not really a rishus hayachid, so then it's not going to be considered a hefsik between the two Rishuyos. Since Minat Torah, Carmelis is batel to the Rishuyos Harabim that surround it, it's all considered one Hemshech, one Rishus on a Daraisa level, and therefore you would be Chayiv Chatos, it would be Mitztarif, the two Chatzoi Shir in the two Rishuyos Harabim. Abaye Yomer, Abaye disagrees. He says, Afil Carmelis, Aval Pislolo. Even a Carmelis would be able to be Mafsik between two Rishuyos Harabim to save you from a Chorban Chatos. But it's just a plank of wood that's placed across the width of the Rishus Harabim, that's not going to help to be mafsik between the two Rishuyos. And Rabbi Yossi would be mode in that case, that if you take a Chatzu Grogeris to Rishus Harabim on one side of the Pisla, and a Chatzu Grogeris to Rishus Harabim on the other side of the Pisla, that you're still going to be chayiv. And then the third day, a Rava Amrafilu Pisla, that even if there's just a board of wood, a plank of wood in between the two Rishuyos Harabim, that's enough to be mafsik. Vaz the Rava Tamein, this is Rava Lishitaso. Dama Rava Rishus Shabbos, Rishus Gitin Dami. Because Rava holds that Rishuyos of Shabbos are similar in their halachos to the Rishuyos of Gittin, and just like by Gittin, a Pisla is considered a Rishus Bifnei Atzma, it's considered a separate Rishus, so too by Shabbos is considered a separate Rishus. What halacha by Gittin do we care about Rishuyos? Is such a din of Rishus Harab and Rishus Hayachid by Gittin? What does this have to do with Gittin? So the din by Gittin, the Nayin Zayin Beis, Maseches Gittin, is about a woman who's standing in Chatzar Baila, and the husband is Makna, a Makom in his Chatzar, that she should be Kona her get through that makom in the chatzar. So he throws her the get on a pisla, on this plank, on this board. So since the pisla is considered separate rishus, she was not kona the get and ain't a mugreshes, because it didn't land in the rishus that she actually is. So that's what... that's what the halacha is by get. So Rava apparently says, the Rishonim point out, Chidushim Michas and Loran says, Rava never really says it explicitly, but in Maseches Gittin, Rava says that there are three halachos that distinguish Hilchos Shabbos from Hilchos Gittin, and this isn't one of them. So it's Michlal Hein Atashomei Alav, so we learn, or Michlal Lav Atashomei Hein, so we learn from the fact that Rava did not include this on the list of distinctions between Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Gittin, that as far as Rishuyos are concerned, if in Hilchos Gittin a pisla is enough to separate the Rishuyos, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, it's also going to be enough to separate the Rishuyos. Okay, Chol Kedei L'Chol Ayinachas. Now we're moving on to other items that we mentioned in the Mishnayos for the Shir Hotzah. When it comes to the amount of eye coloring, makeup, so it's the amount that you would need to color a single eye. It says in our Ayinachas, what kind of woman puts makeup on only one eye and not the other? So Amar Rav Huna, she can't tsnuos kochlos ayin achas. The women who are extremely tsanua, that not only did they wear a burqa that covered their entire face except for their eyes, it covered their entire face except for one eye. That was apparently the style, that was apparently the practice. So it's like, you know, it's a little surprising, no? That a woman is going to cover everything, her entire face, but that one eye that's sticking out, makeup. She's going to put makeup on that one eye. But that's the nature of things, that no matter how tsanua, the idea that that a woman connects to beauty and to color and to wanting to feel to feel attractive is always something that that's a reality, and that's so that she would put kchal on one of those eyes. So kchal on one of those eyes. So Meis face asked the Gemara, kchal means an udder. She wouldn't put an udder. She would put kchal. She would put the makeup on one of those eyes. So Meis face. So the Bnei Yeshiva asked Rav Huna, wait a second. We have a brisa. Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, kchal im l'refua kedei l'chal ayin achas. Now there are two types of kchal. There's kchal that's used for medicinal reasons, that's an eye ointment, and there's kchal that's used not for medicinal reasons but for beauty reasons. So if you're using it for refuah, then the shear that's chashuv is even for one eye, because if one eye hurts and one eye needs the ointment, so then it's a reasonable amount. But im lekashet, but if you're using it for beauty, then b'shtei einayim, then it's only going to be a shear of kchal is only going to be significant if it's enough for two eyes. Isn't that against what we just said, that the tsnuos would only expose one eye and therefore they would put makeup on just one eye? So Tirgama Hillel, Parei Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Kitani, Iranios. That was talking about in a different place, in the women who live in villages that didn't cover their entire faces and that left both of their eyes exposed. So for them, eye makeup on one eye is not going to be enough. You had different practices in terms of what the style was in different places in the world and in different times. So the women used to also, different women used to keep both of their eyes exposed. And that's why they needed makeup for both of their eyes. Okay, we're gonna skip the parentheses over here, and we'll go devek kidei litein barosh hashafshaf. That the amount of glue you need is the amount of to be chayif rotza is the amount of glue that you put on a board when you're trying to catch a bird. So tana kidei litein barosh hashafshaf shebarosh kana shel tzayadin. What they would do is, if you want to catch a bird, you would take a tall pole, and on the top of the pole you'd have a flat board, and you'd probably put some bird seed or something on the board, but then you'd put a lot of glue on the top of the board as well. So the bird would come to get the bird seed, he would land on the board, and then he would be stuck. He'd be like the you know, they have like mouse traps like that, the glue traps, where the animal comes there and then it's stuck. So that's the amount of glue that we're talking about to smear the board with glue so that you would be able to catch the bird. Zephyrs v'gophers kidei lassos, and then we said zephyrs v'gophers, the shear is to close a small hole. Satana kidei lassos nekev kot. Meaning a kli that you would to make the shear is to make a small hole, meaning in a kli that they would have a tiny hole and that you would cover the hole with zephas v'gafras. Charsis, a crushed brick. So kedei lasos pikur, it's whatever they would use to cover the hole in an oven of a goldsmith, in the kiln of the goldsmith. Lemeimra de shira de Rabbi Yehuda nafish, do you mean to tell me that the shear that Rabbi Yehuda gives is the larger shear because than the shear of the Rabbanan? Hakaimilin the shear of the Rabbanan nafish. But we have a Kabbalah that the Rabbanan shear is a larger shear. Ditnan, because our Mishnah says that if you're motzi gemi, the shear is in order to make something to hang the fan of the oven. Rabbi Yehuda Omer kedei lita lemenu midas min l'katan l'katan. No, it's the amount that you would use to measure the foot of a child to figure out his shoe size. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda is more machmir and he's chayev on a smaller shear than the shear of the Rabbanan. So you have to say what Rabbi Yehuda means is kedei losud pitput kira katana, to fill the cracks in a tiny stove and not to make the stand of the stove, and that's a smaller shear than the shear that the Rabbanan said. So Rabbi Yehuda consistently gives the smaller shear, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is consistently more machmir than the Rabbanan in terms of the shear of Hotza'ah. So Tan Rabbanan, an Amud Beis, Tan Rabbanan, Hamotzi Seir, Kedei Legabel Bo Satit, how much hair would one be chayef for carrying outside on Shabbos? The amount that you would need to mix with your cement to make your cement really good, and Tit Lasos Pikur Shel Tzorfei Zov, how much cement? the amount that you would need to close the hole in the oven of the goldsmiths that they would use to stick their fan in order to fan the flames. So sometimes the hole was too big, so they'd have to close in that hole so that the fan would fit more snugly into that hole, and that's the amount of cement you would need. Sid kidei lasud. So then we said sid is a hair removal product that you would need in order to use on a small girl. So tana kidei lasud etzpa katana shebanus doesn't just mean on a small girl. It means the tiniest limb of a girl, that if she has a wart or something that's growing hair out of one of her fingers, so the amount of sid that you would put on that finger in order to make it nicer. It wasn't only hair removal, it also softened the flesh. So if she wants to have softer fingers, so they didn't have all these creams that they would be able to rub in their hands, so they would put this sid on their hand and it would soften the flesh. But how much sid? The amount that you would use for just an etzba katana. Sometimes you have young ladies that have shtei saros. They're physically maturing, but they're not yet of an age that they should be, that it's age appropriate for them to be physically maturing, and therefore it's embarrassing for them that they have these signs of physical maturation. So benos aniim tofos osan besid. So if they're poor, they can't afford the high end products. So what they would use for hair removal is sid. Benos ashirim tofos osan besolas. If they're a little more wealthy, then they would use flour to remove the hair. Benos malachim tofos osan beshemen amor. And if they're benos malachim, if they're royalty, then they use shemen amor, which is the fanciest product. Shenemar, because the pasuk says by the young women that were brought to Achashverosh after Vashti was killed, shisha chadashim b'shemen amor, that they got the best. They were offered the best products. So my shemen amor, what is shemen amor? Two opinions. Rav Huna bar Chiya amar setochas. Shemen amor is setochas. What in the world is setochas? So last time we did the daf, I apparently wrote it into my gemara, perfumed oil, some type of perfumed oil. Rabbi Yirmi bar Abba amar, shemen zayis lo v'yishlish, that it's shemen zayis, it's olive oil from olives that are not yet one-third grown. And the Marshal points out it's called shemen amor because of its merirus. Olives are very bitter, particularly unripened olives are very, very bitter. That's where shemen hamor comes from. Mor, from a of maror. The Achronim point out that the nafkamina would be what shemen amor is if a person takes a neder from shemen amor, what is he not allowed to have? So that's always a nafkamina. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, an piknon, shemen zayish lo v'yashlish. An piknon, which the Gemara in Maseches Menachos, the Mishnah Maseches Menachos tells us you're not allowed to use for a carbon mincha, is also olive oil from olives that are not yet one-third grown. V'lama sachinoso, why would the Benos Malachim use shemen amor? Shemesher esaseir ma'adin abasar. Because it does two things. It removes hair, and also it makes the flesh much more beautiful. So Rabibi havi lebarta. In fact, Rabibi had a daughter, and Tafla, Ever. He would treat her with this ointment, with this treatment, one limb at a time. They wouldn't do the entire body at once because that would be overwhelming. So he did one limb at a time, which, I mean, physically overwhelming. So Shakal ba Arba Mea Zuze, he got for her, for Nadunya, 400 Zuz, meaning she was the most desirable woman. Everyone wanted to marry her. They were willing to give 400 Zuz for Nadunya because she went through this beauty treatment that, in fact, made her so beautiful. It worked. There was a Nachri that lived in Rav Bibi's neighborhood, and he saw how beautiful Rav Bibi's daughter became. He had a daughter. He said, well, if it works when you do it slowly, imagine if you cover her entire body with this stuff all at once. It's going to be even better. And his daughter died. And he said, Rav Bibi is the one that killed my daughter. So the Achronim bothered. No, you killed your daughter. Why would you say Katal Rav Bibi Labarti? That Rav Bibi is the one that killed his daughter. So I saw the Masifta quotes Prashas Mordechai that says that the Nachri was careful to keep Rav Bibi smicha when he gave this criticism. He didn't say Katal Bibi. Well, this Rav is not really smicha, but he didn't say Katal Bibi. He said Katal Rav Bibi, meaning he assumed that the reason Rav Bibi only did one limb at a time was that he thought it was unbecoming of a rabbi to be so concerned with physical beauty, with his daughter's physical beauty, and that's why he clandestinely did just one limb at a time, and hoping that nobody would notice. But he thought that if someone is not a rabbi and someone is not embarrassed about the fact that he's trying to make his daughter beautiful, then you would do it many limbs at a time. So you say, so Rav Bibi, because he's Rav Bibi, and because it wasn't just a regular person that did this, I didn't realize that it was critical to the treatment, and therefore he killed my daughter. Am Rav Nachman, Rav Bibi deshasi shichra bayin bin seitafla. Rav Bibi, you drank a lot of beer, so his daughters needed this hair removal, because apparently drinking a lot of beer makes a person a hairy person. So his daughters required this treatment because beer was their primary drink. Anan, deloshasina shichra, Rav Nachman says, we don't drink so much beer, so lo bayin bin seitafla, and therefore our daughters do not require this treatment. This works in terms of who Rav Bibi and Rav Nachman were, in terms of where they were in life. Rav Bibi didn't have a lot of money, so he drank Shechar Tamarim. That's why that was there was like a lower level mashke. Rav Nachman was an Ashir. He was the son-in-law of the Nasi. So for him, he didn't need to drink beer. He had wine by all of his meals, and therefore they didn't have this problem of becoming hairy. Rav Yehuda Omer Kedei Lasut Kalkul. Then Rav Yehuda said that the shear of seed that Yechayev Rotzah is the amount to be Lasut Kalkul. So says Gemara, well, my Kalkul, what does that mean? What's a Kalkul? And then Rabbi Nechemiah said, Kedei Lasut Andifi. So says Gemara, okay, my Kalkul, my Andifi. What are these things? So Rav, Ubas Tzida. Kalkul means the temple area that they would put the, to hold the hair down on women's temples, they would put this product on. And Andifi means the area right beneath the temples of the head. Lememra de Shira de Rabbi Yehuda Nafish. Wait, are you trying to tell me that the Shir of Rabbi Yehuda is a larger Shir than Rabbi Nechemiah? Hakaimelin de Shira de Rabbanan Nafish. Don't we have a Kabbalah that the Shirim of the Rabbanan are always the larger Shirim? Rabbi Yehuda is the big Machmir by Yotza'a. He always holds a Yechayiv even for the smaller Shirim. So says the Gemara, yeah, Shir de Rabbanan is Nafish, but Zuta mid Rabbanan, the Nafish mid Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't always have to have the smallest Shirim, just smaller than the Rabbanan. But over here, it's Rabbi Nechemiah that we're comparing him to. So he has a shear that's larger than that of Rabbi Nechemiah. So ask the Gemara, wait a second, Meisvei, I'll ask on Rav, who said that Kalkul and Andifi mean the temple and right underneath the temple, Amar Rebbe, Nirin, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda bechavut. I think Rabbi Yehuda is correct that the shear is kedei lasud kalkul if it's the type of seed that's mixed with a lot of water. The Divrei Rabbi Nechemiah, but I think Rabbi Nechemiah is correct that you need the shear for an andifi bebeitzas hasid when it's seed that's mixed with very little water and is a much more clumpy kind of seed. It's that's beitzim means like it's like clumped up like eggs would be clumped up. V'isalkadaituch, and if you're going to say that kilkul and andifi are tzidu bas. That's the temple in the area beneath the temple. So the product you would use on both of those things is a product that would be mixed with a lot of water. You wouldn't distinguish between the area of the temple and the area right beneath the temple. Apparently, they knew the beauty products that were in use. Elam Rabbi Yitzchak Amar de Rabbi Amai Agdifa, that Andifi means a klicheres that had two holes in it, one on the top and one on the bottom. And when you wanted to fill it up, you'd have to plug the hole on the bottom so everything wouldn't fall out. So Rabbi Nechemiah says the shear of Sid that you're chayav for being motzi on Shabbos is the shear of Sid that would plug the hole on the bottom of the klicheres so that when you filled it with wine, it wouldn't all drip out. So Mask Rav Kahn of Chiyad Mosa Ma'osa Van Peros. What, a person is going to use such a kli for expensive wine? What's going to happen eventually is that the wine is going to eat away at the Sid that's plugging that hole and then it's going to ultimately drip out. So you don't want to lose your wine like that. You don't want to ruin your wine like that. That doesn't make sense that they would have such a thing. Elo Marf Krana shnosos. Andifi is the markers on the side of a kli, on the side of a measuring cup that they used to have. They'd have measuring cups that were marked with lines, just like we do, but they would mark the lines with pieces of plaster that protruded outside of the side of the cup. Kiditnan, shnosos hayu bahin, adkan lepar, adkan leayil, adkan lekeves. They used to have in the Beis HaMikdash, they had measuring cups where they would measure the wine for the Nesachim for different karbanos, up until this level is what you need for the Nesachim of a par, up until this line is what you need for the Nesachim of the Ayil or the Keves, and that's how they knew how much wine to bring. Viva Yisema, my Andifa Aputa. Another possibility is Andifa means the forehead where there is no hair. It's not a hair flattening or hair removal product. It's just to make the flesh look nicer. V'chihada, Ubar Galila, Diklal Bavel, just like someone from the Galil who went to Bavel, Damrulei, the B'nai Bavel said to him, Kum Drosh Lanu B'maisa Merkava. Come tell us something about the Maisa Maaser Merkava. Give us a drasha in those psukim in Yecheskel and Yeshayahu about the Maaser Merkava, particularly in Yecheskel, where you're not supposed to learn from. Samar Luhu, Edrush Luhu Kedarsh Rabbi Nechemiah Lechavre. He said, you want me to darshan to you the way Rabbi Nechemiah darshaned the Maaser Merkava? And what happened to Rabbi Nechemiah when he darshaned the Maaser Merkava? V'nafkas Arisa Min Kosel, a hornet came out of the wall, Umachte Ba'andifi Umis. And it stung him on his andifi, and he died. V'amalei Mindilei Dalei. It was because of him he shouldn't have darshaned from the Maaser Merkava. Meaning all of Rabbi Nechemiah's chaverim said he got what he deserved because he was darshaning the Maaser Merkava. Now you want me to do the same thing? Why are we bringing this whole story? Because he reuses the word andifi. So you see that andifi means the forehead because that's where a hornet must have stung Rabbi Nechemiah that caused him to die immediately. That's the only reason we quote this story. But there is such an inyan not to darshan the Maaser Merkava and Maaser Bereishis, things that are distant from us, that are beyond our capacity to understand, that we have to recognize that there are certain things, malafrim, malachar, what was beforehand, what's going to be later, things that we can't possibly understand, we can't possibly actually connect to, so we're not supposed to bemuflim chal tidrosh, we're not supposed to darshan things that are beyond our ability to understand. We have to sense the humility to say that we don't understand. I was just listening from the Vayichan program yesterday, the interview that David Lichtenstein did with Rabbi and Rabbitson Feldman of Atlanta, Georgia, Rabbi Ilan Feldman, and one of the things that Rabbi Feldman said that I thought was very important, he said, you know, at the beginning of this whole pandemic, everyone was saying, oh, this must be Mashiach, everyone had a taich of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing, of why, you know, it has to be that it's Mashiach. He said, well, why does it have to be that we understand what's happening? Meaning it's very likely that we have to approach this with a sense of humility and say, we don't understand what's happening, we don't have to understand everything, we just have to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, but we don't have to understand that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. It's almost a sense of gaiva to claim that we understand everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing. Okay, says the Mishnah, Adama, the amount of mud, of red mud, kechosam amartufin, it's the amount that you would seal a bag with. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, chamam kechosam igros, the amount that you would seal a letter with. Zevel b'chol hadak, if you have manure or very fine sand, kedei lezabel kelach shel kruv, the amount that you would use to fertilize a stalk of cabbage. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, chamam kedei lezabel karisha, a different vegetable, that the amount that you would use to fertilize a different vegetable. Chol hagas, more coarse sand, kedei litan al melo kafsid, the amount that you would use to put on a plasterer's spoon. Kanek de lasos kulmus, a reed, the amount that's big enough to make a quill out of. V'maya ava omerusus, but if it's not fit for making a quill because it's too thick or it's cracked, kedei levashel babetz akalish abetzim trufa nusuna be'ilthis, then it would have to be enough firewood to make a fire that could cook a very easy egg to cook, that when it's mixed with other products and it's placed in a frying pan. So al malokaf sid, so we said that that cholagas, the shear is that a plaster would put on his utensil. So tanik deilitan al pi kaf shel sayodin. It's on the mouth of the kaf that a sayod would use. Man tana dechol mali lelasid. Who's the tana that holds that sand is actually good for plaster? So Amar Rav Chista, meaning that they would actually place this in plaster. So he explains Amar Rav Chista Rabbi Yudi. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yudi. The tanya lo yasra the mespeso besid. After the churban habayis, a person is not supposed to plaster his entire house. Elim kein irav bo teven ochol, unless he mixes some sand or straw into it, because that downgrades it. Rabbi Yudah Omer, Tevin Mutter. If you mix Tevin in, that will downgrade it and that will make it appropriate for a post-Chorban era. But Chol, Aser, Mneshu Traksid. But Chol is going to make it stronger, and therefore you're not supposed to put sand in it after the Chorban. So apparently sand is very good for the plaster. Rava Amar Afilu Teim Rabbanon. Now you could even say we're assuming like the Rabbanon, who hold that sand is bad for the plaster, but Kilkulo Zehu Tikuno. It's Mekalkel it in terms of it makes it darker, so it doesn't look as nice, but it does make it stronger, meaning one is in terms of how it looks and the other is in terms of how strong it is. Kanak de lasos kulmus. Then we said a reed that's large enough to make a quill. So tanu kulmus hamagil kishrei etzbaos. If it's got to be a quill that reaches your knuckles so that it's comfortable to use. Bayir avashi kesher alyonu kesher etachton. Which knuckle? The upper knuckle or the lower knuckle? Teku, the Gemara leaves that unresolved. Vim haya ava, but if it was a reed rather that was too thick to make a quill out of, or that was cracked and was therefore inappropriate for a quill, then it would need to be large enough to make a fire to cook an egg. So Tano, what's a beitza trufa? Trufa b'shem and musuna b'ilfas means that the egg is mixed with oil and placed in a frying pan. Amalei marbred ravina lebrei, mishmi alach beitza kala maihi. What is a beitza kala? What does it mean, an egg that's easy? So amalei biyasa tziltzla. It's a beitza of a tiny little bird called a tziltzla. So how do they translate tziltzla? They say like a small dove or something like that. So my time, mishum dezutra. Well, why did you pick a small dove? Because it's a very tiny bird. Ema ditzaparta. I'll find you a smaller bird. A hummingbird is an even smaller bird. Why don't you say the amount of a reed that would make a fire that could cook a hummingbird's egg? So ishtik. He didn't have a response. Amalei midishmi alachba. So he said to his father, "Did you ever hear any answer to this?" So amalei, he said, "Hach yom Rav Sheshes." Yeah, Rav Sheshes explained, "Beitzas tarnagoles." That the beitza kala is not these tiny birds. It's a chicken egg. Umay karla beitza kala. Why do we call it a beitza kala? Shira chachamin chabeitza kala levashel yosam beitzas tarnagoles. It's the easiest egg to cook. It cooks the quickest, and that's why we call it a beitza kala. Umayshna kol shira Shabbos kegrogeres va'acha kabeitza. Why is it that when it comes to every other shira of Shabbos, the shira is always a grogeres, and over here the shira is a kabeitza? Amalei hachi amrav Nachman kegrogeres mi beitza kala. No, the amount of egg that you would need to cook in order to be chayiv is a grogeres. But what kind of egg that you would need to cook in order to be chayiv for the hutzah of the firewood that would be used to cook that egg is the kind of egg is a beitzas tarnagoles. But the shear remains a grogeres, so we remain consistent as far as the shear is concerned. Okay, we'll stop there in Bezhem. Tomorrow we'll pick up on the top of Pei Aleph Amin Aleph at the Mishnah. Okay.
Shkaya.